This week on the Design Review, we continue with part two of our series on design process and how we go about doing great work.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Design Review. My name is Chris, and with me is Jonathan.
Hi everyone, it's part two of our series on process. It's the most important thing on how to make consistently great work. We all have been there where you have a great team, you have a great product, but what comes out is always just sort of the same old thing, or it's just not that great. And then sometimes you go through a cycle and bam, you have like this amazing thing come out of it. And if you stop and you look and you see what was different, usually it's about the way you went about that particular problem.
Yeah.
So that's why we want to focus on process so much, and we're doing a multi-part series, is because it's so important in a designer's career and really honing those things down so that you can consistently make great work.
Yeah, so to recap, you should definitely go back and listen to the part one of this series, but just to recap what we talked about, we first discussed how to identify the right problem to solve. And we talked about the problem of always going after low-hanging fruit. You probably have heard that term before.
A million
times.
In
your company.
People love low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Gorge themselves on it.
Yeah, yeah. But it's this idea that if you always do that, I mean, it might not actually help solve anything for your customers. And there's a potential for these sort of low risk, low effort solutions to actually have very low impact also. And so it's important to make sure that you're identifying the right problem to solve so that you can actually do something good for the people that consume your product.
Yeah, and taking a risk on potentially high impact things, even though they might have like a medium level effort.
Yeah. One thing I want to mention too is like sometimes in startups, as a designer, you are more often just doing like more production type stuff. And we had a show about production design, but you're often doing more production work than necessarily design work. And that's just because of stuff like this, where like people are asking you to like, okay, jam out like every week some new low-hanging solution. When maybe it's not the best idea.
Yeah, like I've worked mainly in startups before I moved to Intuit, which is a huge company. And yeah, I can totally attest to that. Like, I can also say that like teams in big companies can also be held back by like that same perception of like they don't have a vision for the future past the next milestone. Like, they're constantly thinking about, okay, like, well, we have to deliver this to leadership, and you know, we're gonna have that meeting with this important person. So, you know, we're just gonna do the bare minimum in order to like validate and move on.
Yeah.
And what they don't realize is that they're actually building a foundation for all the future versions moving forward. And so, like, you just, you know, do this like little by little by little, and then you're like, great, it's validated, and then you have this like all this extra work to do to go back. But most of the time, that never happens. You never go back. You just keep, okay, well, we have, you know, this base level of features crappily done. Let's add another level to that shanty building, and move on from there. And then I think another problem with that kind of comes is like, you know, the tenure at most companies and startups these days, especially in tech, is like, it's like under a year or something like that. I think like Facebook was like, when they surveyed like the Bay Area startups, I think Facebook was like the most with like just over a year as like the average tenure. So yeah, I mean, it's no wonder that people think that way, because they're trying to like just achieve something before they move maybe on to the next company.
Yeah. They like do one project and that's it.
Yeah, like you do the one project, so you just want to get something done. You know, if you're really grounded and like creating a foundation for this project, and you're going to be, and also you like people move projects often, so they don't really have the investment to like lay a solid foundation that's not that interesting, per se, on like a resume or portfolio. But for the company, it's good. You have to really be invested.
So instead of the whole like low-hanging fruit thing, in the last show we talked about, you need to understand things first, and who is the customer and what problems are they facing and why are these problems important to them? And it's very important to learn about the context around the problem, not just, the particular details of what you need to do. It's important to keep the context in mind so that you have the right frame of reference of where to start working, basically.
Yeah, and it's really like talking about foundations. Like that's the foundation of the whole rest of the process. So if you're working backwards from a date, try to add a little bit extra time than you usually would on that step. And also go and listen to the previous episode if you haven't.
Definitely do that. So following that episode, we got a bunch of email from listeners, and I thought it would be good to kind of answer their questions before we get on with today's discussion. So we'll start with this first one from Adrian. He writes, "Hi guys, thanks a lot for your work. I've been listening to your show for a while, and it's always been helpful to me. I have two questions that relate to your current series. One, how should a UI and UX designer be working together? When does one's job finish and another one start? And two, how should a product owner and a UI designer work together? I am currently facing both of these issues in my day-to-day work, and I can't really untangle this situation. Thanks, Adrian." So I did reply to Adrian's email via email, but for the benefit of our listeners, let's talk about these. So first of all, he talks about how should a UI and UX designer be working together? My question is UI and UX really different? I think it's actually not that different, depending on, depending on how you look at this. But companies like to kind of separate these two fields for some reason, or at least create these two different types of roles. But I don't find that separation very useful.
Yeah, I mean, especially if your goal is like a cohesive vision and experience, it's really difficult to break that vision up into like multiple, into just visual and just like the interaction piece. At Intuit, actually, we do have them split, so I feel like I can actually speak to this a little bit, because obviously you can't just talk to them like, yeah, I don't think our roles should be split, so I think one of us should quit, something like that. Or,
And it's going to be you
yeah, and it's
that
or like, all right, half of you and half of me will like do surgery, and then we'll make two, designers who can do both. No, yeah, oftentimes you have, these strengths, right? It's like someone's really, they're strong in visual. And there's strong interaction design. So like I come from a background of like doing everything. So I'm so used to like, doing both sides of it. So it might be a little bit biased, but I really felt that like, just like you said, there's a huge overlap in knowledge and skills, and the outcome is often really confused. So if you have an interaction designer just focusing on interaction and then handing that off to the visuals, and the visual person kind of coming in making changes, oftentimes there's a lot of friction there because, you can't change visuals without changing the usability of a page, without changing the functionality, and then vice versa. Like if you're working on the structure of the page, but you're not considering, the visual language of the company, or, it would, just look terrible. I don't know. Like I've seen both. Like, so at our company, we have some people maybe that are like way more on the interaction side who have like zero visual skills. And oftentimes it takes a lot of reshuffling just to get it to the place where it needs to be, and you lose some of that like initial vision. So yeah, I think it almost like working with like a front-end engineer, you need to have at least have as much overlap as you possibly can, like if you're one of these people on these bookends, like try and, you know, add skills to your repertoire to like shift more towards the middle a little bit. Like obviously it's good to have like a high niche like ability, but the more you can shift over, the more useful that niche part of that high skill of visual or whatever actually is. Because if even if you have this really high visual then but you're trying to like use it in a UI, it needs to be middle. You're not like cheapening your skills, you're not being a jack of all trades, you're actually making that other half of you more useful. And then also, you know, I think it's really helpful just in the working relationship to make sure that those roles are really clear so that when there's friction of like, well, you know, you think that, you know, these need to look like this and be over here, but as the person working on the interaction, you know, I think that breaks down the whole vision of the page. So like, we need to think of something else. So like, and then vice versa, like, okay, that's great, but you know, this area needs to be one of these things to be part of the design system, you know. So like making sure you have those roles clear so that when there's friction, you can just defer to the person who owns that part of it. If it's a visual thing or an XD type thing. Obviously again with it being blurry, sometimes that can be difficult, but it does help.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if you have like this type of work split, it's really not helpful, I think, to make it like an assembly line,
Yeah.
because it's not like you just apply, you apply an interaction design, wireframes and then just like put some polish on it afterwards. Like it doesn't actually work that way in practice. And so it's better to involve everyone who's working on a project in the project discussions, right? So
Yeah.
if you're discussing a design concept, bring the UI guy in and bring the front end guy in and have them, give you feedback about your ideas. because similarly, when they actually present their ideas of like how something should look or how something should be built, you also want to be able to participate and have like constructive discussions about the work they're doing. And so,
Yeah, and ownership, like, because one thing that I hear really often from designers, like when we do these mentor nights and things like that, is, you know, aside from like getting the job, then I think the next most popular thing is, like, how do you sell your design at work? Like, I can't, like, they constantly feel like their ideas and stuff are getting kind of run over at work, or you know, they design something and then, you know, they get all this like terrible feedback, and then they have to change it, and it kind of loses its character or something like that. So this helps with that. You know, like if you're involving everyone from the beginning, one, you know, you're getting that feedback up front rather than at the end. And two, they feel ownership now. So it's like a psychological thing. They're much more likely to support whatever comes out of that because they were involved in it coming out.
So if you have the tendency to just like, do your design kind of in secret and then like in like 3 weeks you like show a bunch of mock-ups or something, like that's not going to work for most people because they want to know what's going on. Not because they're being nosy, but just because they have a vested interest in something being successful. And it's important that you kind of share that with people so that they feel like, yeah, that they have some involvement and they had some say in what went on. Which then relates to the next question you had about product ownership. So I'm not sure exactly how you have things set up in your company, but usually a product owner is just a role within a company and not necessarily a job title. So, for example, if you're talking about like Agile and Scrum or whatever, a CS rep could actually be a product owner for a bunch of user stories. And so, in general, I would say the product owner within this Agile Scrum framework, the role of the product owner is to manage the backlog, and that's it. So they groom the backlog, they develop new user stories, and they make sure that whatever stories are going into the next sprint is like the right stuff for the Scrum team. And so that said, you should just work with the product owner just like anybody else in the company. You be polite, you be respectful, you have discussions about stuff. So that said, if you're feeling like they are also stepping on your toes a bit, which sometimes happens, the question I would actually ask you, Adrian, is what could you do to resolve this, right? what would you want to do? How would you, if you put yourself in their role, like how would you want this to be explained to you that maybe you want a little more creative control or something? If it were me, I would just take them aside one day and just have a conversation. Maybe go get a coffee or something. But the main point is communicate what you want and what you need them to do, so that you are more productive. So yeah.
Yeah, and if you're an introvert, it's great. You can just send them a blind Outlook meeting invite, and then with like agenda, and then it's out in the open, and then after that it's a little bit easier. And a lot of companies, like the PM org of the company kind of runs the ship, or the people if it's a smaller company. They usually run the ship because they're kind of like taking the business needs and then figuring out like what needs to happen and then making it happen. And they usually kind of tell design and dev like what to build. But as designers, we actually have a really unique position, because we understand what users want and their needs really well, and like that's our main focus. And that actually gives us a really unique opportunity to contribute. So PM hopefully has the ownership and the grasp of like the business needs. And then dev should know like capabilities and things like that. And then if you all work together, then you actually get to use all that experience and things like that. And then the designer gets to advocate for the user in this whole thing, right? And so if you're all working together, like we mentioned before, one is you get the ownership and you also get all that feedback up front, but you also get all this like combined expertise. So like we're talking about the brainstorming phase coming up. And this is a really great opportunity to not just say like, okay, what do you want? Okay, great. And then the designer or the designers go and brainstorm about it. And then they present these brainstorming. Now, you have to involve people. You don't need to be a designer to brainstorm on solutions. You can be anyone. And then
Exactly.
you get this like, you get all these little bits of expertise plus just general brainstorming ability, which you'd be surprised at like the awesome ideas that like developers can do. Who knew that these like super smart, like really well educated people can come up with super creative ideas? We definitely write them off too easily. And then this also includes things outside of that, general, three-pronged group, but it can also be like customer care people. They, as designers, we like to think we have a really good idea of customers, which I would say we probably know their needs a little bit, but customer care is way more of an expert than you might think because they're constantly hearing the problems day to day, and they also have to like, walk them through solutions. So while they might not like have the exact expertise you do, but they have a lot of great perspective on things, so it might be a good idea to bring them in. And there might be other groups that make sense too. So yeah, definitely bringing all of them in is a good idea. But the main thing is, as a designer, is you your position will be however you react to things. So when working with PM, you might feel like they're just telling you what to do, and you're rendering it, and then you're coming back with it. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can push back. You can have a unique position. Say, I as the owner of the experience of the UI, I think it needs to be like this, and I think users have these needs that aren't being met in this. Like, we need to rethink this. So just have a strong opinion and work with them to resolve it. So you really have to learn to, push back, advocate, debate, negotiate, do all that kind of great stuff. That's what really makes a great designer.
All right. The next letter comes from Stan. He says, "Hi guys. I got to hear about your episode 57, Defining a Design Process. It's my first time hearing your podcast, and it's amazing. Thanks for the
Yay.
insights." Yeah, thanks, Stan. Here's a question. Have you faced operational issues that causes no one to use the digital service, like a mobile app? And is it still possible to use design thinking to solve operational issues? Cheers, Stan.
Cheers.
Cheers, yeah. So in general, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by operational issues, but the fact that nobody uses a particular service could actually have a bunch of different reasons. And some common ones are like, some simple stuff like servers are just down and people can't access something. Another one is if it's a mobile app, like maybe maybe the App Store pulled the product and or didn't they like they didn't launch it when they said they would. That sometimes happens. Sometimes there's just no marketing. Like maybe you put so much emphasis on getting the product out to market and you didn't have any time left to actually promote it in any way. And then similarly, like maybe there's just like ineffective marketing or like bad SEO or things like that. Not all of these things actually are like design thinking problems, right? Like the fact that your servers are down doesn't require like a whole round of brainstorming about it. Although maybe the engineers might need to think about like why the servers went down. But it's not necessarily a design problem, right? Definitely marketing has some design aspects associated with it. And if your marketing, if you did do some advertising and promotions and they didn't work out, it definitely would help to do some sort of brainstorming and thinking around that. And again, just like with what we've been saying, ideally your marketing team would involve more than just other marketing people in the sort of brainstorming and ideation of like how to promote their product. And so if you can establish that kind of relationship with them, then great. Otherwise, I would say try to work with them on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think design thinking, when we're talking about like essentially tools for brainstorming ideas, or exploring the problem space or something like that, like they are useful for a lot of different things. So like they're kind of like a pocket knife in that way. So I think to that effect, yeah, your team can potentially use them. Just like Chris was saying, if there's like one specific solution, you just got to go and find the bug and fix it, right? Unless there's like multiple ways to fix the bug, and then maybe you're debating the different options, and then there's specific tools for that. Like maybe you're doing like one of those XY graphs, and you're picking like how well it does it, and the effort level and all that kind of stuff, and you guys are brainstorming on that. Like they're just tools for facilitating thinking. So if it facilitates the flow of ideas, it balances input, and it keeps the team moving forward. So in that respect, if that's what you need, then go for it. That's the goal, is just to try and make a solution out of like a lot of ambiguous stuff.
Cool. So now that we did all that, it's on with part two. So today we want to actually discuss what happens after you've defined the problem. So let's say you did a bunch of research, you talked to your customers, you did some interviews, you sort of figured out the problem space. How do you actually start developing the right kinds of solutions?
I don't know.
And I don't know either. But no, the first thing is to start brainstorming. So we just talked about this from Stan's email. But yeah, brainstorming is super important to your job. And it's very easy to feel like you can just start making mock-ups. Like I've done that before where you just jump in, you start, okay, I know what I want to do. I'm going to open Photoshop right now and start like putting everything together. And then invariably I get about like 10 minutes into it and I go, what the heck am I even doing?
Watch, that's
Why did
so
I just do
true.
all
Yeah.
this?
Yeah. As soon as they tell you, you're like, oh, actually, I got two ideas. I got three ideas. I'm just gonna go render those right now while I have them in my brain. And then yeah, and then you get into it and you're like, actually, this won't work at all. I'm stuck. What am I gonna do?
And then it's like, oh God, I just committed to delivering this by the end of the
Yeah,
day. Oh
they're like, okay, so when do you think you can get that, yeah, to us? And then you're like, yeah, you're in your head you're like, well, just to render that, it doesn't take that long, so I'll, yeah, by the end of the day, like 7 hours, sure, I can do it in 7 hours. Seven hours of just designing, sure.
So don't do that. Instead, start with some simple brainstorming exercises. So at my job, we often do group brainstorming. So we pull people from all over the company. Sometimes it's good to even involve your customers, but given the nature of our work, since it's like R&D type stuff, we can't, it's very confidential and we can't pull people from outside into our brainstorming activities. But we definitely include more than just the designers. We pull engineers, we pull researchers, we pull all kinds of people in to discuss the ideas and what we'd like to do. So how does it work? When we do these sorts of sessions, we start by describing the problem that we identified, or maybe it's just a topic that we're interested in working on. So taking all the results from, say, the work we did based on the first episode on this series, we talk about that with the people in the brainstorming. We talk about who is the customer, things like that. And then we ask people to spend some time, maybe, 5 to 10 minutes, writing down as many ideas as they can on sticky notes. And after the time is up, each person basically gets their notes and sticks them up on a wall and sort of talks us through their ideas. And then once we've done that, the designers that are directly involved in the project, or whomever it is, it could also be the engineers, they will go through the ideas and cluster them into meaningful groups. And it's a little bit like a card sort where you want to take all these ideas that are put together and sort of sort them into things that make sense. And I do want to mention that after doing this sort of initial clustering, sometimes I've gone back like weeks later and reclustered everything because sometimes you don't have all the knowledge you need at that point. Or as you work on it, you have like new ideas that come into your head. And so maybe the initial clusters that you put together don't really make sense for the way you're thinking about the project. So don't feel like you necessarily have to stick with whatever you had at the beginning. It's totally fine to like sort of resort things around. And then yeah, like one little side effect of doing things like this is that if you take a step back from the wall itself and just look at the size of the clusters that you have, sometimes the amount of stuff that's in one of the clusters could actually serve as a leading indicator of how important that idea is. It's not always reliable, but it can sometimes be helpful for focusing your attention on a particular aspect of a problem.
Yeah, I also find it's really helpful to do another like mini round
Yeah.
after the stickies actually go up, because some people like they really get that their ideas flowing when they're those ideas spur new ideas essentially.
Yeah,
So that's a good
no, yeah,
idea
yeah.
too. Yeah, and it's good to have like one person leading that, but definitely have everyone involved in that clustering exercise. So as you are going through, make sure that somebody is doing it and also like making the decision of like, well, this could go here and it could go there, or it could be at its own. Like just have one person make that decision and then everyone can just go along with it. The important thing usually with these type of things is to, one, keep the energy level up. It sounds so like BS, but it's true. Like it can really like slow down and die down, especially when you have a lot of people in the room. I feel like the more people you have in the room, the more it feels as like one cohesive like animal that you have to work with. And then also, making sure that everything's moving forward, because you can really get stuck on this. You can go over time and things like that. So just making sure that there's like a pace to it is really important as the person, who's like moderating this.
That's why we set a time limit. So, we actually put it into, the iPhone timer thing. So people will be sitting there writing stuff down, and then at some point the phone makes a whole bunch of noise, and then, you have to stop. So.
Yeah, it's super nerve-wracking when you're like sitting in front of a blank note. But like one good thing to like to like start them off is like if especially if you're the moderator, is to like first just allow people to write, and then during that like 5 10 minutes that you're waiting, maybe like pop off a few questions or prompts that can help generate some ideas, or at least get their brain moving. Like, well, how would this work if, it was done by magic or whatever? or like how should we not do this, or how, like all those type of other things that just sort of like help people get unblocked is really helpful. Because
That's a good point because there are, not everyone's familiar with doing this type of thing, right? I don't know about at Intuit, but definitely like, if you pull somebody in from across the company who's never done this type of process before, it can be really hard for them to just get started. So posing like different interesting questions like that, even if they sound goofy or whatever, like, how do we do this with magic? But like,
Well, I mean, it's also good to like, if you do have like a big group of them or something and you want to like warm them up, I've done that too. I mean, that usually you don't have time for it, but if you do have, it's an important thing. You have like a lot of time to do just like a warm up, you know, like something that doesn't matter for the company. It's not a big problem. It's just sort of like a, you know, what should we do for our company party or something like that, just to get people familiar with the ideas, as it can be really helpful. And then also letting people know that, you know, just write everything down, like whatever comes to your brain. If it's a bad idea, just put it down. If it's like a idea that you know everybody else has already thought of, just still write it down, just because it just helps dump the brain and like let it open up to the next one. So yeah, all those little things can really be important when you're trying this. But the most important thing is just to do it.
Cool. So what happens next? So now you've got a wall full of sticky notes and they're clustered in some way. This is time now where you have to synthesize everything. So you should by this point have done some research. Hopefully you've talked to customers, you've done some interviews and whatever else. You have now also a wall full of ideas that have been sorted into meaningful groups.
So sorry, so real quick. So I have a couple extra points on the brainstorming thing before we move on. One is just like treasure the brainstorming phase because this moment won't happen again, at least not for like a long time. So don't spoil it by either skipping it entirely or like rushing through it. Like really do it right. Give it the time it deserves. Like if you have 7 days and you're giving brainstorming like 2 hours, you know, and like and also the next phase, like of like sketching out ideas and things like that. If you're just giving that a couple hours on the first day and the rest of the time just in like production and iterating and getting feedback, like that's not enough time. You definitely give it more time than that. You know, like a full day, I think works.
Maybe two.
And like we were saying before, you need to like get the team back together. You know, like everybody who could potentially be contributing and be involved, get them in here. Like even, you know, if you have a facilities person, just bring them in, because a lot of times they don't really need to know too much about the topic and to just to contribute of ideas, and you can get this like other perspective on it. It's really helpful. And then also, you know, like we said before, make sure you have some like structure. Make sure you have rules. That can be really helpful, because that's the one of the reasons for these type of things, other than just like the format itself. It's because the people, when you're like in a meeting, if you're just talking, usually there's a lot of like dynamics that happen that doesn't really help create those ideas. Like for example, you know, you might have one person who kind of like dominates the discussion, and you have all these other brains that are there that can think of some really good stuff, but they're more quiet, or they're just like, you know, too quickly, or like able to just like go with the strong voice. So that's another thing that these type of design thinking exercises facilitate, is like, it allows those type of people to be unhindered by the strong voice and to like just, you know, create some ideas, have like a space to like think, and like without having to think of like the social aspect, you know, in the moment, things like that. So that's really important, is like to have those rules and to like be strict with them a little bit, and then of course like break the rules when you need to. So it take as a facilitator, it's nice to know like when to like stick with the rules and then when to break them. Like for example, you know, there's really high energy, really great ideas popping out, and things are really moving forward quickly. Like, you know, okay, yeah. You know, maybe you gave 10 minutes to go to the next thing, but people are already really excited about moving on, and you have some really good stuff you guys are working with. Maybe just let it go, you know, things like that. And then next thing is like to make sure you write all this down. So like if you're doing sticky notes, obviously it's written down, so that's great. But even like taking a picture of like the clusters and things like that, like making sure you're documenting every step of the process is really good. We talked about that a lot on the meeting episode, which is a good one too. And yeah, stay off your computer as much as possible. Like maybe you're, you know, you wanting to like look up things, but you're gonna get distracted. Like when you're at a computer, you are in computer mode, like whatever you're used to doing. So that's why it's really good to be off the computer. So like if you want to do this creative whiteboarding, sticky sketching, whatever you want to do, it's good to be off the computer so you're not distracted, or your brain doesn't shift into like work mode. And then the last thing I wanted to say was, you know, open Pandora's box as much as you can. I hate looking at the competition, when I'm thinking of of ideas, as far as you're looking at the problem, but then when you move on to brainstorming solutions, it's really good to look at the competition. And I personally don't like it, just because if I'm really honest with myself, it's obviously because I don't want to copy them. Then what's my job? That's not why I got into design, right? Is to just copy other people. But at the same time, I think it's a little bit of my ego because I want 110% credit for my ideas. I want to be able to say oh yeah, this was all me. This was just out of my brain, kind of a thing. And I want to revolutionize the design world with every idea that I come up with. And it's completely, I have 100% ownership over it. But I need to calm down. The job, my job is to fulfill the needs of the customer in the best way possible. So it's not to make me look awesome. So yeah, it's really important to look at the competition, look at other people's ideas that have done this before, because who knows, they've probably spent a long time considering things that you probably haven't considered yet. And it's a really good jumping off point to create some really good, better ideas that are, spin-offs. They're not like copies. They're totally different. They're solid ideas because they're better than what's already there. But to that effect, it's also good to not do that immediately. When you're brainstorming ideas, give yourself the virgin idea generation phase in the beginning. And then once you've done that and you've kind of emptied out your brain on that, then go look at the competition and what's out there, what the, what the solution space is, the competition space is, and then, see if that generates some new stuff for you.
Something I want to mention, I think we discussed it a little bit in the last show, but when you're doing your interviews, chances are your customers have probably used a product at some point in their lives from one of your competitors. And so I think it's important to consider that as part of your brainstorming activities, so that you can talk to customers about their experiences with another product, for example, and say, well, how did it work, and how, what did you think about it, and why are you still using it? Why are you not using it now, for
Yeah,
example,
or
that sort of stuff.
why are you doing this entire thing in an Excel sheet?
Okay, so you've done brainstorming, and so now you have to synthesize all the results together. So with all your customer research and your sort of ideas and clusters, it's now time to sort of figure out how to formulate this into a design concept. And so usually what I do at this point is a lot of sketching and writing. We talked about writing in a previous episode. And you might even need to do some more research. So maybe some of the ideas that people put up on the wall, they actually triggered some new ideas that then mean you have to go look into some other kinds of technology, or maybe there's another customer segment you need to find out about. But this is really where a lot of the design work starts to happen.
Yeah, it might be a good place to go talk to customers to validate that problem or solution that you guys came up with. Could be a really good opportunity to take that right away and put that in front of customers in just like the interview format.
So here's a question. I mean, I do a lot of sketching and writing and sort of just idea generation after doing all this like brainstorming stuff, but how do you know when to actually stop? Like, how do you know when you
Oh, that's hard.
have something,
Yeah, because
right?
you never really, you always feel like it's not enough. You never feel like it's good enough. It's never like, I mean, once in a blue moon, you're like, oh, this is gonna be fun. Like, this is gonna be a great idea. Well, I can't wait to go render this in sketch or whatever. But yeah, more often than not, it's like this ambiguous, thing where you kind of have solved it, but maybe not that great. But I think it's really important to, I think one thing that can really help with that, if just assuming you have unlimited time, of course, if you have a milestone or a timeline that you're working towards, that generally helps spur things forward. But aside from that, I think that the next best thing is getting it in front of either a customer or even just other people at the company, just different brains, different perspectives. That really helps get you unstuck, because then it just get a solid idea or a concept forward, but it doesn't have to be perfect, it doesn't have to be life changing, but just having that in front of people to talk about is so helpful in moving that idea forward.
Maybe to tie it back to Adrian's initial question about the UI and UX designer, this is a good point for the two designers or more to actually work together on sketches, to come up with ideas for things. And this is that sort of shared collaborative model that I think is really important. If you both are sketching out stuff and talking about your ideas, then you have a much better chance of doing something that as a group you sort of are in favor of.
Yeah, I've been kind of feeling like this is like the way to go, especially if you have the team for it, like you have the numbers for it. Because right. One thing that, you know, making sure that there's not a single designer for every single, you know, problem or flow is, you know, when you have multiple people creating the ideas and multiple creating parts of the concept, I want to be clear, it's not like concept A or that, you know, that Jonathan did, or concept B that this other person did, and then you have to pick one. That becomes really combative and like it doesn't feel great, you know. What I mean is like you have like concept A and concept B that contain feedback and collaboration and elements between the two designers. That I think is really good because, again, you just, one, you have the two brains, like that's there's always great stuff comes out of that. But also, like, it really helps bring the ego out of it, because you know, it's not 100% your thing, so you're more willing to change things, you're more willing to just like, you know, push it forward, than if it's just yours, you kind of feel like, oh well, you know, I did this because of X. Like, you know, you get a little bit more defensive when someone challenges like a particular piece. So yeah, that just a random note on that.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys work in pairs at Intuit?
Not really. I wish we did more of that.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have the visual designer like kind of being contributing to multiple projects, and I just wish like, you know, like each project had like maybe more than one designer and then maybe just like sharing the scope a little bit more. Cause right now it's very specific things one by one.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. We tend to work in pairs. It's a little more complicated because then everyone has a lot more projects.
Yeah. You have twice as many projects. Yeah.
Yeah. But I also feel like kind of the output is a little better because, you know, it's been looked at by more than just me or, you know, one of the other people, right? You have a couple set of eyes and brains looking at it and trying, at least a couple, actually. You have a couple of people looking at it and thinking about things, and it's really helpful, I think, especially in this phase, when there's so many possible solutions, to, you know, have people that can sort of vet ideas and really talk about things as a group.
Yeah, and another reason is like, you know, you have like another designer, maybe, or, you know, maybe your team, like you're doing like a peer review of your design, but it's later on, like they're not gonna, if they haven't gone with you in every step of the way and also just spent time in your particular, you know, ownership of the product, and they don't really understand the needs of that particular part, that it's really, I don't know, I always find like the feedback is not always that as useful than if somebody's in the trenches with you and understands the why of like why you guys after like 3 weeks finally, you know, change that to that, even though, you know, it does not as, you know, immediately looks a little bit more visually, you know, confusing or something, but, you know, you guys bled for that change or something, you know?
Yeah.
It helps with that. It's like, if you have another person who fully understands what's going on, you know, the amount of type of feedback and solutions and things you get from your design as both of you are moving forward is just way, way more. So it's like, and developers, they do this, they call it like pair programming. There's like all kinds of benefits for it. So I think design needs to do. So it sounds like, so you guys do this. That's awesome.
Yeah, we do. Like I said, it's harder because you're kind of split over more work. So you can't always necessarily focus 100% of your attention to just one thing. But to make up for it is you have another person that can sort of counterbalance maybe some of the negative impact of being split over a couple projects. Mm-hmm. And I also think it's helpful because, let's say you're working on a product within sort of a family of products, it's helpful because now you have the chance to make things consistent, right? Because You might not be working on something else within that product family, but they might be, your partner might be.
Right.
And because you've had the chance to discuss maybe some concepts over in your project, they can also take that and talk about it with somebody else in whatever else they're working on.
Great point.
So it's a good idea. I would suggest we move towards that in general. But yeah.
Yeah, and I think also at this phase when you're just getting out of the bring, leaving the brainstorming phase, and you're trying to synthesize these ideas into something a little bit more tangible in order to talk about it, get feedback maybe from business owners, maybe from customers. So it's really important to mock something up at this point. And that can be as high a fidelity and low or low a fidelity as you need in order to test that core idea. And I always find that whatever you decide, do it a little bit higher fidelity than that. If you're talking to other people, right? Like if you're talking to other designers, like well, even then actually.
Especially then.
Exactly. Maybe especially then, but people I've in my experience need higher fidelity stuff. The imagination isn't there. Like I've heard and I've seen people like test paper prototypes with customers, but I think your problem has to really facilitate that. But more often than not, like the higher the fidelity can really help. Even though, like there's definitely a balance because you're constantly like maybe like, oh, well, why isn't that, this way when if it's like too high fidelity? But man, I don't know. Like sometimes you just have to go all the way, like literally just like write copy and like everything in order to like get people to stop looking at all that other stuff, or stop asking those questions. But I mean, like, yeah, if you really think you can test the core idea without that fidelity, then bring it down and just do it in a low fidelity just to like iterate and get moving quickly. And as you grow as a designer, this actually speeds up like the because you're trying the idea here is speed, as well as not getting people distracted on the other things, other details. But as you grow as a designer, you actually get really quick at creating semi-high fidelity stuff, and so you can actually up the fidelity a little bit, and or just find that perfect medium, just from experience of like the people you're working with of like what they need, and really hone that in because it's something that we've all been through. Like either it's too low fidelity and everyone's like, oh yeah, we love this, and then you put it into higher fidelity and it doesn't make any sense. Or, they have too many questions and it's not really helpful because it's medium fidelity, or it's too high fidelity because they're asking like why the copy should be this way or whatever. But I find that people, especially if your copy says like generally what needs to be conveyed, like, okay, I want this area of the copy to say something about, the value props here, and here it should say why we're asking for this information and, whatever. That can be really helpful. So in the mocking up phase, you really have to think about not just the problems, but your audience that this is about to go forward with in order to give that idea a chance to be validated or, or not. It's fine if it's a bad idea, it's a bad idea, move on. Yeah.
Yeah, you might figure that out as soon as you start, using the right typefaces and stuff, that holy crap, this sucks.
Yeah, we're like,
You should trash
yeah, our design system is, this is not gonna work in our design system. Like, yeah, it
it.
looks great, but we have nothing like this, and it'll be like totally out of place. So everyone has to be okay with this or something,
Cool. So yeah, that was the next point, is like once you have identified what ideas you want to like commit to, this is the time to start envisioning things so that people can see what you see kind of in your brain. And this is a mock-up, right? Something that I want to make sure we talk about is that as a designer, you don't always have to make screens. The idea behind a mock-up is that it's just kind of an example. It's a fake example. I mean, it's as close to real as it can be, but it's not an actual end product, right? It's just sort of a sketch file or a Photoshop file. It's not an actual working piece of software yet. And so the point is, you don't actually have to, whatever it is that you mock up, it doesn't actually have to be a screen, for example. We talked about this in our No UI episode, or you could read the book by Golden Krishna, The Best Interface is No Interface. There are many different ways to figure out what sort of product you need to make. And it doesn't always have to be sort of a UI example, right? In the book, he talked about how, like, there's this tendency now for people to slap screens on everything, right? Like, you have a refrigerator. Well, what do you need for a refrigerator? Put a screen in there so you can see your Twitter feed while you get orange juice or something.
It's great.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it feels like nowadays people jump right into making screens when maybe, you know, if you just put your mind to it a little more, like maybe you could come up with something a little more creative than just here's a UI for whatever problem it is you're trying to solve.
Yeah, or even like they don't need to always come into the product in order to. Like, so it might still be a screen, but it doesn't necessarily have to be like interacting with the product. Like it can be, okay, it's a notification and they click yes, and then that's it. They don't go into the, they don't have to have a whole flow, or like they get an email and they say yes in the email and they're done. Like that, you don't have to like actually always bring them into the product, have them go through like an entire flow. It can actually be really like low key, just getting the job done.
Obviously, if your product is something, screen based, like a mobile app or, a tax form or something, you'll probably need a screen at some point. But the point is to, like, don't be afraid to just let go of thinking about screens in order to figure out what a good design might be.
Yeah, that's so true. And especially when you're in the very beginning stages of a product or of a solution that you guys are working towards. And if you're a startup, this can be a really good opportunity to really think about the other ways in which your solution, your technology or whatever can the you know the problem that you're solving can actually be rendered into like not just screens. Because for example, if you're like doing like a payment system, like I remember this one from the book, like if you're doing a payment system, like it doesn't have to be this like screen thing where you click 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 and then you pay. It can just be like you walk up and you pay, right? Like you can think about the ways that like the other things, the technology, and then create like an even better experience because you're thinking outside the screen. And yeah, and I think it's really important before you start to move up a level, because like we talked about, sketching and even mock-ups a little bit, but even before you get forward with the sketching and the mock-ups, it's really helpful to make sure you have a solid understanding of one, the problem, just like we talked about, two, the users that this is going to be for, like making sure you have details about them. And get this information in front of you. Three is the use cases that are involved in this mock-up, that the users were going to be using this. Like how are they going to be using this? Like what are the use cases for this? And then the scope. Like it's it even though like usually when you're trying to think of like all these broad ideas, you don't necessarily want to think of scope. But when you start to like move forward in this like rendering, this like consolidation phase or like mock-up phase, it's good to think about the scope. Think about what's doable in the time period. Is this do they want to see everything, how this can be, and then we're gonna like chew it up into parts? Or is this something that needs to be an iteration of what we have now moving towards something better? So making sure you have all four of those things before you, because otherwise you're gonna be meandering through these anyway as you go through. And instead actually like thinking about them before, having them in front of you is gonna help you avoid a lot of designer block. It's gonna reduce a lot of the ambiguity. It's gonna reduce a lot of the wasting time like exploring random ideas that don't really solve one of these four things.
We
And
did
also a user flow chart is really helpful if you have a semi-complex flow, like even three screens plus, like it can be really useful to map out that flow and the interaction between the pages before you get into like some of these higher fidelity like mocks. Because you will have to redo them later on anyway. And it really does help it become like a really confident step after step after step. If you follow the process we've been talking about from front to back, it really makes things a lot easier to do and to be to like move forward. Because if you've ever felt like kind of lost, you're like, well, you know, like how's this gonna be? You like if you actually do it this way, it actually feels like you're not doing that, like you're not getting paid enough because like it's so easy, you know, like I mean, you know, you just like literally just follow the next step. You have some ideas, you follow the next step, and it becomes so much more like every step becomes so much more confident when you do it this way.
I'm glad you mentioned the flows thing because there have been projects where I've worked on where, like, when you map out the existing product, so before you've actually sort of redesigned it and you just map it all out, sometimes you can just see in there, like, okay, if we just got rid of like these three steps, we can make the product like 100 times better already.
Oh, that's the best thing as a designer is getting rid of stuff. Oh, it's the best feeling. Designing stuff is nice, but getting rid of stuff, oh, that's the best.
So yeah, it's good to definitely like map stuff out. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, and also like to sign off on like so if you once you have those in front of you and you know you even have the user flow, to get those like in front of the team and have them be like, yeah, that's right, you know? Because oh my gosh, like I'm talking from experience here of like, you know, you go through and they're like, oh no, the use case is like this or something. You're like, well, that's nice to know. Thanks a lot. You know? I'm like design this in a totally different way, or like, well, it's too late now or something, you know, like so making sure you get those done, because it just it makes it as linear as possible, and it makes every step so much easier. Like just it's so, it feels like there's no ambiguity. There's just like, oh yeah, okay, so the next thing I'll do is this and this, and then eventually you kind of come up with awesome product. And that's the whole idea of a process, is like reducing those like weird moments of your design process of like as you're going through and creating a mock or like a final product. And you have like these weird moments where you're like kind of lost, or you know you're circling back and you're redoing work, and or you know you're getting like feedback at the wrong time, like all of those things. That's what process is for, is to like clean those things out, iron them out.
All right, so now that you have a mock-up, so you've done all that stuff and you've got all this material now, so what happens next? This is the time where it's important to start realizing this vision. So, you know, taking your mock-ups and actually making them real. And we will save this discussion for the next episode.
Yep, it's not an internal episode, don't worry. Yeah, we'll be talking about vision, so join us for part three of this series. We hope you're really enjoying this series. Thank you so much for listening, and if you like just like our listeners, you have questions about even last episode or this episode, or you know coming up, if you have questions about vision, email us. As you know, we read everyone, we respond to everyone, and we might even use it on the podcast. So you can find our contact page on designreviewpodcast.com, and that's where you can find all our episodes as well as the contact page, and let us know what you think. It doesn't have to be a question, it can also just be a compliment. But speaking of compliments,
Whoa.
You can leave us the best compliment is to leave us a review on iTunes, which we've received two recently. So
Wow.
thank you.
We'll read these off real quick. So the first one comes to us from Molly Polenta. She gave us 5 stars. Thank you.
From Australia.
From Australia,
Yeah.
yeah. And she writes, "It's favorite design podcast. Listening to Design Review has helped me a lot in my career. They have helped me to focus on what's important, to pay less attention to what is meaningless, and helped me to realize that we all make mistakes."
True, true.
DR helps me stay in the loop with what's going on in UI design and enrich my vocabulary and verbal skills when discussing design. They seem like genuinely nice and humble people also."
Oh, it was
Are
so
we?
good until the end. I think you kind of missed at the end.
Well, cool. Thanks, Molly, for that one.
Yeah, thank you. That's really awesome to hear. That's why we do this, is to hear stuff like that. It makes us so happy to hear that we're helping you in a really in a real way in your career. So that's awesome.
The next one comes to us from Henry Lau. He also gave us 5 stars. Sorry, my Alexa was going off there. Oh, sorry.
She
No.
doesn't like the reviews.
Yeah.
She, Alexa has not given us a review.
Okay. Sorry about that. Henry writes, knowledgeable and experienced. Chris and Jonathan's knowledge about the industry is vast. They know everything there is to know about the UX design industry.
I don't know about that.
That's pretty high praise, yeah. Oftentimes, they give insights on the show based on their past years working at various companies, from startups to bigger companies. An entertaining show.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Henry. That's awesome.
Thanks, Henry.
Yeah, we're happy that you have that illusion of us knowing a lot. That's great. We're really helpful. We're really happy that it's helpful.
Yeah.
So great. If you enjoyed the podcast, we would love for you to leave a review. This not only makes us happy, but also helps us to get in front of more designers.
Yeah.
So head to iTunes, search Design Review, and give us design 5 stars.
Yeah, 5 stars. Yeah. Cool. Also, you can find us on Twitter, the Bluebird. You can find me. My handle is @machinehuman.
And I'm DesignUXUI. And hopefully you have enough characters to you have like the 480. How much is it?
280 now.
Yeah. 480 is next.
Yeah.
So you can say more, and you can ask us more questions, or say you like the show.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, we'll catch you next time on part 3. We will talk to you then.
All right. Bye.
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 Bye.